Welcome, Black Hollywood Live fans. On today's Fit Club, we talk Beyonce, Serena, Demi, and more with Voice alum and current coach on the floor, Courtney Harrell. Stay tuned for more.
You're tuned into Black Hollywood Live, Fit Club.
Welcome back, Fit Clubbers. We are back with an all-new show, some great topics today. Again, I'm your host, Shaka Smith. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at Shaka Strong. I got TK Trinidad.
What's up, y'all? My name is TK Trinidad. You can find me on everything at TK Trinidad.
And we are joined by Voice alum Courtney Harrell, current coach on the floor. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be back.
Yes, and where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram at I am Courtney Harrell, Twitter at Courtney Harrell, Facebook the same thing.
Nice. Getting everywhere.
Nice
getting everywhere.
Gotta
spread that social. we got some great stories today, and we have our Fit Club 5 later for you, where we ask you some five rapid-fire questions.
Okay.
Answer off top.
Okay.
Forgot to tell you about that earlier, so it'll be
that's
a
okay.
Surprise.
It'll be natural.
Yeah.
It'll be natural.
Real surprise. The first story surrounds Beyonce and Serena. We know that they actually both went through very complicated pregnancies. Mm-hmm. Beyonce, it seems, actually suffered from preeclampsia, which is protein in the urine and high blood pressure. She had a C-section and was forced to be on bed rest for about a month prior to the pregnancy. And she said that she went through self-love and self-care, and she said that she really embraced her curves and accepted what her body wanted to be. And I think you were saying, TK, something about the fupa that she started to embrace.
So she's been on tour, I don't know, maybe last month or so, and it's maybe about a week and a half. Everybody was speculating that she was pregnant, because the last time... Oh, you don't need to like...
I'm sorry, baby.
So the last time she was on tour... she was pregnant, and then the last time she did a performance, you know, it's kind of so they're trying to follow the pattern. Turns out she wasn't pregnant. She just didn't. Not I shouldn't say she didn't bother lose the weight, but like she said in the article, it's like, this is where my body's at, and when I'm ready to kind of go hard and go in the paint, then I will. But I'm comfortable with where my body's at it now. So she pretty much just told her fans, or not her fans, more the haters, just like, you know, get life.
Well, this is real life.
Yeah.
What has been your experience with that as a mother, and then being in the public spotlight, and then having to coach people that are going to maybe have a long career in the industry?
Yeah, I applaud her.
Yeah.
I think it's very brave to honor where your body is, and that's even crazy to even have to say that.
Yeah.
It's brave to honor what your body does naturally after, like, performing a miracle.
Yeah.
But it definitely is something that I struggle with and struggled with after having my son, because I had him so young. The weight came off rather quickly, and breastfeeding, that burns like 500 calories, so I did that for a long time. It helped, but you know, as I'm getting older, my body is doing
changing.
Its own thing.
Yeah.
And I'm at a place now where I'm trying to really just embrace where it is, but it's difficult. So the fact that she's able to do that after setting such a high standard, and I don't think she did it intentionally, but we all admire her for how fierce she is in every way. I think it's amazing, and I really... you know, applaud her for that.
Yeah, and a conversation I've been having a lot, I feel like a lot of people in the Black community are having, is allowing ourselves to take care of ourselves. Mm. Because you always felt like, well, I'm already running this race 10 paces behind. Mm-hmm. I can't let up. But you realize not doing so actually leaves you at a disadvantage.
Yeah, it definitely does. Wait, I mean,
well, go ahead. What are you going to say?
My whole life right now is centered around self-love.
Yeah.
You got to make sure your tank is full. It's
wait,
full.
Speaking of self-love, you had a 21-day challenge on Instagram.
I did. I had the Love Yourself Happy challenge, which will be coming back.
Where did that come from? How did that start?
I battle with depression and anxiety, and I have my whole life.
Yeah.
And I think, like a lot of people, we wait for this thing to happen to kind of make us happy. And I've learned over the last maybe 7 years that that's just not how it works. You have to give it to yourself first. So the idea was for me to find one thing and invite other people to do the same. Find one thing that makes them as happy as you would as a kid.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was like, okay, I'm going to go roller skating because I haven't done that in forever. I may fall and look like an idiot, but I'm happy. And one day I decided to go horseback riding, but it could be something as simple as buying myself flowers. I love flowers.
Yeah.
There's no one buying them
and
for
then putting
me.
It on Instagram to show
to
people,
say, hey, this is it. I also, to be quite honest, wanted to change the narrative that we see about Black women in media, which is the ABW. We're all angry.
Mm-hmm.
and we're all bitter and we're all mad because we ain't got a man. I'm not that woman at all. Like, yeah. I know there are reasons for women to feel that way, Black women in particular, but my friends are happy. Yeah. Like, you know, we got pictures that are Pinterest worthy. Yeah. You ever been on Pinterest?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I wanted. I'm like, listen, I see all these white women living their best lives.
Yeah.
We need to see us doing the same thing. So that was the motivation behind that.
I love that. Did it change the way you relate to Instagram? Like, were you able to get rid of, at least for me, before I post a photo, I'm like, I want it to look great and perfect. If I'm just posting for happiness, I'm just going to post whatever, and it's going to get rid of, I guess, a little bit of that.
A little bit? There are a couple on there. It's like, girl, you look a mess. But not completely. I'm not free from that. That's why, I applaud Beyonce, because I'm not there yet.
So. Well, you have to remember Beyonce, how she trekked her career. Like, mm-hmm. she's a go-getter.
Yeah.
And she did everything. I'm assuming, you know, the pregnancy, there have been rumors that the pregnancy wasn't a natural pregnancy, like it was artificial insemination, all that stuff. And she did everything, you know, how she wants to do it. If you notice her Instagram, she drops plenty of pictures when she feels like dropping it. She doesn't post every day, all this other stuff. So, I mean, she's at that position where she can say, this is my body, deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also showing, it's great for other young women looking at her. If you notice the whole thing with the Super Bowl, when she came in, like, you know, more, she talked about more Black issues, all this other stuff. She wasn't doing that 10 years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you can definitely see that she's more comfortable in herself.
Yeah.
But I think that's the natural progression of anybody who is self-aware or trying to be self-aware. That's what happened. She's 36 years old.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if she hasn't come to that point and she's still, like, you know, trying to suck it in or have, you know, doing the whole Kardashian effect, having people, you know, change the picture, you know, you're not really acknowledging yourself.
Yeah.
Like, she might be okay with it now. 6 months from now, she might not be okay with it, and she works hard and gets rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't hate her for that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Beyonce's queen.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, another queen, Serena, also had some trouble with pregnancy, C-section, blood clots, hematoma in the abdomen, and was actually on bed rest for 6 weeks afterwards, and as we know, went to the Wimbledon final after that. Crazy.
Mm-hmm. That was before.
Huh?
That was before.
She went to after all of this, she goes to the Wimbledon final. Like, insane. But what we do know is that 830 women actually die every day from preventable deaths. 700 every year in the U.S., but worldwide, 830 women die every day for preventable death. And she actually had to push her medical team to check for the blood clots in her lungs. It's Serena Williams. Mm-hmm. She has all this access, but she has to tell her medical team what to do. And, you know, a lot of it comes from just not really necessarily trusting Black women when they're telling the doctor, here's what's wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
And just have you had to deal with any of that, where you have to be very proactive about your own medical care and some of the advice you're getting in order to feel like you're getting the adequate amount of care?
Not personally, but I definitely have seen that with, like, my mom.
Yeah.
My dad even. You have to fight for it. Like, I'm the advocate for them.
Yeah.
So fortunately and thankfully, I've predominantly been quite healthy, at least physiologically healthy. Mm-hmm. But I do know that it's an issue with my best friend, who just, she's so badass. She just kicked one of the worst cancers you can have in 7 months' time. But we had to, you know, be aggressive with her treatment and searching for things that were going to be life or death for her.
Yeah, because a lot of us accept exactly what we hear from the doctors without doing more.
Mm-mm. I don't believe in that.
I think it also has to come with the preventative. So, like, you know, it's people who go to the doctor on a yearly basis who are very in tune with their body. So if the doctor 1 year tells you something, but you know your body's been doing this, then you're going to be like, okay, well, no, my body's doing this, so that you can now, you know, fight for that.
Yeah.
But if you're not going to the regular checkups, or if you're not, you know, you're eating all this type of food and you're not really in tune with your body, it's a lot harder to kind of question that doctor, because, you know, you don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
So that's why it's so important to kind of know, like, Dr. Oz talked about it like 5 or 6 years ago. Know what your poop looks like in the toilet. Know all these little things about yourself, because at the end of the day, even though that doctor went to school for 10 years, he went to school 10 years to kind of cover the broad sense, not necessarily you.
Your particular case.
So yeah. You just never know. So, I mean, you have to definitely be aggressive. And that's where the whole thing is, especially with black women, where it's like you're aggressive because you want to find an answer, not because you're angry. Yeah. Mm. But then people take that into account, and then it's just a whole other thing. So you have to find a doctor who's understanding, who doesn't take offense to it. Because I find myself, when I'm aggressive in a certain situation, I have to let them know, like, no, I know this is not part of your job. Like, I have to kind of calm myself and also calm them down too, because it's like, I don't want you to now kind of get upset at me because I'm trying to help myself.
Heal myself.
So it's just kind of like you have to come up with this backwards, like, okay, no, it's not you. I know it's not part of your job, but this is what I'm trying to do. So if you can't answer these questions, then I need you to find somebody who can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, and the fact that we have to do that, it's a whole... Another thing.
did you find yourself advising your mentees on the four holistically in that way of like taking care of yourself, making sure that fitness is a part of your routine, that you can't just be, you know, this great voice without also the package to a degree?
Absolutely. Yeah. Primarily because I'd been in their position on another show.
Yeah.
So fitness is important to anything that you're doing, but when you're in an environment that is prone to high stress in the way that that show is, you're not going to survive it without taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
So they didn't always have the time to work out, which is the hard part. But definitely making sure they got enough sleep, making sure they were getting enough, you know, hydration so that their vocal cords would not freeze up on them. And I encouraged meditation, affirmations.
Nice.
I encouraged all of that because it's an environment where it can cause you to doubt yourself.
Yeah.
They're actually looking to see, do you really believe in yourself? So you're provoked to some degree by the environment, and then also by the people that you're challenging, those who are in that, you know, those four seats, and then the challengers who are coming to get a four seat. It's intense. So, yeah, I definitely encourage them to take care of themselves.
And how did they cope? Because it's so different when you're a singer versus when you're on set and you're filming.
Mm.
And, you know, filming has a different life of itself. So was it difficult for some of them to be singers on a show?
Absolutely. There are some that are just incredible, but when they got to that stage, you couldn't tell, unfortunately. But it's, you know, it's again, it's a psychologically, you need to be fit.
How did you overcome that?
I did a lot of the things that I told them to do.
Yeah,
I don't know if I fully... I mean, I overcame it in that I went pretty far, especially considering not having sung, you know, for as long as I did. I feel like I kicked ass.
And you said you almost forgot the words because they started clapping so
early. I totally forgot the words. But I, you know, I prepared for that.
Yeah.
And I had a coach outside of my time on The Voice that prepared me for that. You need a team. It takes a village. And there's Beyonce isn't Beyonce by herself.
Yeah.
You know, Serena isn't Serena by herself. They have people who are there supporting them and making sure that all they have to worry about is their job.
Yeah.
Not trying to figure out, you know, the ins and outs and everything of everything else. And what I found as a coach is that a lot of these artists who are independent are used to handling everything. Mm-hmm. So it was hard for them to let go.
Yeah.
And just be.
Yeah.
You know, that was a challenge for a lot of them, but you got to be strong pull this off.
That's crazy. But I love that you say preparation. So preparation is key.
Absolutely. You can't do it without being prepared. And what's interesting is this show, you can get called because it's like a rolling enrollment process, right? It's always open. So they could have shot an episode and you could be at home watching it, and they call you 2 days before they want
you
to come
in. There. Wow.
So you have to be
always prepared.
Yeah. Always prepared for anything to jump off for you. Not just for that environment, because you'll never know. And the case with me and The Voice, I didn't know. I told the show no for months. I was like, I'm not doing it,
really?
Not doing it, not doing it. Yeah. And then finally, when I finally said yes, I had like 3 weeks. In hindsight, I'm like, if I had said yes earlier, I could have taken it home.
Because you could have had that extra time.
I would have had it, and I would have been able to study the show. I would have been able to know the lay of the land, but I didn't. I was not prepared. I got in my own way in that regard, I'm sure.
Well, I will say preparation is key, but maybe not in this particular case. So if you've been preparing by washing and reusing your condoms, not a good thing to do, according to this. According to the CDC. And they started the statement with, we say it because people do it. Do not wash or reuse your condoms. Use a fresh one for each sexual act. It seems like this is stuff we should all know. But again, honestly, there are people, and this is worldwide, they're really addressing. Mm-hmm. And even here in the United States, there are people that don't have access to condoms, mm-hmm. that for getting a condom is very prohibitively, it's difficult for them. Maybe they have to travel far to get one, or the pricing, or, you know, whatever. There are barriers to obtaining these things sometimes. And some people feel like they can wash and reuse. And the CDC wants to let you know it's just not as safe.
Okay. But you also, too, remember when, maybe the early 2000s, that was a discussion all over the place. Like, BET had discussions. There was songs about it. There was commercials about it. Not necessarily the condom use, but just using condoms.
Yeah, yeah.
So now we come to an era where those people who, you know, the people who are in that generation, like, we know, because it's kind of been everywhere. But when's the last time you saw a commercial about using a condom?
That's a great point.
Right? So now you have a whole another generation after us that they just kind of know they're there, but unless somebody really sat down with them and educated them about it, because I don't know if they necessarily do all that in schools, you're just going to think, okay, well, you know, I use it so she doesn't get pregnant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, that there's like a disconnect there, but again, you can't have the world, not unfortunately, but you can't have the world kind of teach the kids. There has to be some type of thing there. But I'm guessing that there's just a generation of kids that just don't. That have no idea because there's no discussion about it. They don't talk about TV shows. It's not in movies. You see a person maybe rip open the condom, but you don't see them use another condom.
Maybe. You may see now because Insecure caught some heat for not showing.
Oh, really? Oh, not showing.
Like, the use of condoms in their show.
Yeah, wow. But they use the condom. You might see them rip open the condom, and you might see them do the act, but you don't see them in the middle of the act ripping open another condom.
Yeah, you're right.
It felt like
And
it felt like back in the day, they would make a point to do it as to be like, oh, and this is the PSA time.
Yeah. I don't know if they have that anymore because of like the Hulus and the Netflix and stuff like that, and people fast forward through commercials, so I don't know if that's a thing.
These are really good points, guys, because I was just going to say that's nasty.
But you just don't.
Glad. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever find yourself giving advice to any of the contestants where it was like, I can't believe I have to give this blatantly obvious advice?
Not that kind of advice.
No. Oh, no, not in that way.
Did I ever have to? No. I can't.
They're
pretty sharp.
They had together.
Yeah, I mean, for me, well, let's say the obvious thing is like take care of your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it wasn't for them. A lot of them are like late teens, early 20s, like we discussed earlier. Like you're used to just picking up and going and not having any consequence for that initially. So that is the only thing that like really is blaring to me.
Yeah.
That I had to.
Well, I think that's big. It's even bigger than the washing and reusing because of taking care of your body. And you just don't have an appreciation for it when you're young sometimes.
Yeah.
I think there's like that and that and money. I feel like people, this is a whole nother topic, so I'm just going to touch it lightly. It's like, I feel like there's a generation, including ourselves, where you have no idea of how money really works until your credit's so screwed up that you can't do something. So I feel like, you know, taking care of the body part, I remember my coaches telling me about that, right? And you didn't really appreciate it until after it's like, oh, yeah, that now it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But the stuff like, you know, money or even, you know, preparing. Mm-hmm. Preparing in no matter what you want to do and looking beyond, you know, the money, actually doing what you love and consistently doing it, that's when you'll get to reap the rewards. Mm-hmm. You have people who want to do it and then they just give up and they're like, oh, okay, like it didn't happen for me.
I would see that
with
contestants because of the access that we have to immediate gratification when you post something online.
Yeah.
When you're getting someone who's saying, nope, you can get better, you can do better, try that again, try it again, it would cause them to kind of cower to some degree and break their spirit. Mm-hmm. That part was, you know, really interesting to see.
Were you able to overcome that within your contestants?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we practiced the power of intention. There was one in particular with Jesse Kramer, the rocker.
Yeah.
And
who almost improbably, you know.
Yeah. I mean, he was kind of like a miracle to even get on the show. Not to get on the show, but to take a chair.
Yeah.
Because he took out a powerhouse, wonderful, like, black singer.
Yeah.
And he came up and sang Jeff Buckley's Hallelujah on his guitar, and it was very, like, unlike anything that the show was even looking for.
Yeah.
But prior to, I had a conversation with him about envisioning what he wanted. Mm-hmm. He wanted, and he did exactly what he said he wanted to do, which was show that rock and roll was not dead.
Yeah.
And one of his favorite artists is Elvis. And I said to him, literally before he gets on stage, I said, give him Elvis. If you go back and you watch his audition, Diddy references an artist who blended rock and soul and gospel, and that artist is Elvis. And I lost it because I'm like, we just set that intention. And I'm really a big believer that if you come to any platform, any room with what you want to get accomplished and what you want people to walk away with, they'll catch that. So to hear Diddy say that back was amazing.
Oh, that's crazy. That's, I love when people can just kind of manifest what they want, but putting the work behind it and make sure they get there.
Yeah, because he's, I mean, he was one of the... I shouldn't say few, but he just worked in a way that others didn't, which I think helped to make him
and not
shine.
To be afraid of being the first one to do it, to kind of buck the trend.
Yeah.
Wow. The last story is on breastfeeding as a choice. And we actually talked about this before, but so we'll talk about your personal experience with this. But it turns out that black infant deaths are higher than white infant deaths when it comes to breastfeeding. So they or size and weight. They're finding that even with college-educated black women, that there are disproportionate amount of infant deaths due to size and weight. Two times the rate of black babies are dying at or twice the rate of white babies as a result. And even in San Francisco, when you kind of correct for the affluent population, it's 9.6 out of 1,000 versus 2.1 out of 1,000. And they're attributing this to saying that breastfeeding really is largely presented as a choice to black women, and because of the history of slavery, where black women were forced to breastfeed the slavery owners, trying to say in the most politically correct way.
We don't need to do that. the black women, the mammies, were breastfeeding all them white kids.
And so there's been some sort of cultural stigma, I guess, with breastfeeding tied to slavery for black women. And so they're saying that they need to get better images, and that it needs to be promoted to black women, that really 12 months is the gold standard for breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. But you guys said you guys didn't have this experience.
Mm-mm. I never heard that. I really want to know who was the author of this.
Yeah.
Because, like, I have a lot of friends who have kids. I'm both my mother and my dad's side come from big families. That wasn't, if anything, the reason why people stopped breastfeeding is because they had to go back to work.
Wait, but you're from Canada.
I'm from Canada, yeah.
Well, I mean, they're saying because it's like slavery, so...
Yeah, there's... You do realize there was slavery in the islands, too, right? That's how we got there. We got dropped off first.
Oh, wait, so I'm saying, was there slavery in Canada?
So,
she's from the island.
Here's
family's
education.
I'm saying real question.
There are slaves for the Underground Railroad. They went to Canada. That's why you have the black people in Nova Scotia. They're actually Americans, but they went to Canada.
Yeah.
So technically, there wasn't slavery in Canada. Yeah. However, the slaves went to Canada because there's freedom.
Mm-hmm.
However, in the islands, we just got dropped off first, so there's slavery there.
Okay.
So it's still a huge thing, but I've never heard the reason why a black woman doesn't want to breastfeed because they attribute it to slavery.
Oh, you know,
I never heard that either.
That's why I'm really curious on who wrote the article.
Well, I think,
and were they black?
That's the main question.
We're trying to get to
that's the main question. I know they're trying to soften it up. And
no, I think, I mean, to me, it made sense. I mean, obviously, you guys are black women, have a different experience, but to me, it made sense that there would be some sort of generational fear, you know. Anti that because it's so tied to slavery. So if it came from your great grandmother, you might not know why you feel that way. You might not be like, oh, this is a slavery thing, but you just know she didn't breastfeed, wasn't a big fan of it, got formula right away, and then you kind of continues that trend, and it's never made important to you.
Yeah, but the thing is, she didn't breastfeed her children because she was breastfeeding other people's children. So in anything, it should be the reverse effect, that you should be like the grandmother would encourage her daughter to breastfeed her own children because she wasn't able.
She
she to do that with her children.
Of that. Yeah.
Well, I think they're saying she didn't because she just thought she thought of her own breastfeeding as tied to slavery, so she didn't even encourage her to do it to her own child.
Because when you're looking down, you see a white baby that's not yours. But, yeah, I think you'd just be grossed out because it's just not your baby. Mm. Versus.
Here's this part of the study. They find that black babies, infants, are given formula 9 times more than white babies in the hospital after birth. So you're not even getting a chance there. You know, they're giving black babies formula 9 times more than they're giving white babies formula mother choose.
And this isn't like amongst a certain economic class of blacks.
Yeah, they're saying they controlled for this.
I don't know. I've never heard any of that.
Yeah,
because the only way they'd be given formula is if the mother, and I've heard this across black women and white women, etc., is that they can't breastfeed the baby because there's no milk coming out. So there's like they don't latch. Which is a whole thing.
But I think they're saying that these doctors are making the decision to just give these babies formula.
Well, that the doctors make the decision, that's a whole different thing.
No, that's what's happening. These hospitals are giving these babies formula at 9 times the rate that they're giving to white babies.
Well, then that's a discussion that you have with your doctor. So that has nothing to do with what the woman. As a mother.
No, the idea is, are they treating black women differently when they come to the hospital?
Well, of course they do. Serena's talked about that plenty of times when she did her documentary.
So it's a matter of not being educated by your doctor. What we're saying? Is that the question?
Yeah, basically they're saying there's 3 or 4 reasons why black women have a lower breastfeeding rate. One's the slavery idea. One's the other idea that we're not getting the same care as white women are when we're going to the hospital, and that doctors are not valuing our choices or our options at the time. The third is that it's being presented to women as a choice rather than like this is something that's mandated.
It is a choice.
Well, no, I mean, people don't... They're not mandating or telling black women that the American Academy of Pediatrics says 12 months is what you should be doing.
Gotcha.
Versus this is just maybe if you want to.
Yeah, but if the doctor literally hands my baby formula without asking me, then that's a problem. Because
I wonder how many black women know this or believe that.
Well, that's the whole thing about speaking up for yourself. And yeah. I think a lot of people just let, no matter whether it's health or whatever, people just allow things to happen, which you have to question it every time. Because even though, us at this table want well for each other, that other person doesn't know you from mm-hmm. Adam. Mm-hmm. So they may subconsciously, because they think you're human, but they think you're different. So they're just going to assume based off of whatever they saw in the past that, you're going to want this.
Yeah.
And that's why you have to almost be very vocal where they know, she might say something. So let me ask first.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's so difficult to do that without knowing that you're in a disadvantaged situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of almost similar in the entertainment industry where you have to be vocal about things that you don't know necessarily to be vocal about, but maybe you have a feeling about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did you navigate that? How do you tell that to contestants that are new into the industry, like when to speak up, when not to speak up, when to be like the person that's cool and can be cool to work with versus now they're going too far and it's kind of...
That's a really great question, because I think in any business there are some concessions that need to be made along the way to
that are reasonable,
perceive
that are,
success, right?
Yeah.
But if the concessions that you would have to make violate what you value and yourself, you always have to say something.
Yeah. Did you?
I don't think that's negotiable. You need to speak up when you feel like you're being taken advantage of or you're being robbed in some cases. Mm-hmm. And I think you see right now with the rise of the independent artist movement, people are realizing, you all have been robbing us for decades.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just to be quite honest, I'm a songwriter. Ain't no money in songwriting right now. Because
I thought that was where the money was.
It was where the money was. Yeah, it was.
But it's not now, and a large part of it is because the laws have changed, right? So the way that things were paid out when we were actually buying physical copies of albums, or the only way you could consume music, if not purchasing it, was on the radio. Now it's streaming. The laws are different. We're actually now in the fight to change that.
Yeah.
But in part, y'all are stealing from us. So, that, you know, that's something that a lot of us, Sona being one of them, songwriters of North America, have gotten together to, like, raise hell over this, to make sure that we're not being mistreated in this way. And can actually live. Because it's come down to songwriters who have records that are popular. They may be high on streaming charts, not necessarily radio, because there's always a large chunk of money that comes with that. But if you say you have something that goes, does well virally, it doesn't guarantee that you're going to be able to, like, live off of that.
And are you able to, do you tell your mentees, like, hey, this is how the industry is going to work you over?
I absolutely do. Yeah. And to make sure that they educate themselves on the business that they're in and look for ways to monetize other aspects of their...
multiple streams of
income. Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, we're all doing it. We're branding ourselves now, right? So Shaka Strong is a brand. It's not just you anymore. So artists have to do that. And you even find that consumers are looking for people that they can buy into, not just the music anymore.
Which is unfortunate.
So, yeah, it is.
Because you can no longer be about the art or about the profession. Now you have to, you don't have to, but in order, if you're to make a certain amount of money, like, for instance, you can't just be a basketball player. Oh. Like, LeBron James is a producer. Mm-hmm. Now he has, like, 3 or 4 shows. He's still playing basketball. He just opened up a school. Like, you know what I'm saying? And you don't have to have his type of money, but guaranteed if somebody else comes into to the league and does all of that, people are going to now know him, look for him, and then support him no matter what team he's on.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a lot of pressure no matter what you do to separate yourself from, you know, from the pack beyond the talents that you have.
It is a lot of pressure.
It's a whole marketing, you know, system.
The beauty of it, I'm finding, is that it allows someone like me to stretch and be creative in other ways.
Yeah.
So I've always had a love for passion. I mean, a love for passion. I love passion too. But a love for music and the arts and business. Mm-hmm. And so when we're used to seeing someone who sings or someone who plays the piano or plays basketball, all you tend to think is, well, that's what you do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I naturally rebel to that. No, I don't just do that. I can manage your artist as well or come and coach someone over here. So it's allowing people like me the freedom to be more than just one thing.
So we can't say shut up and sing. shut up and dribble.
Yeah.
Which is his style.
I love that epic trolling of, what is it, Laura Ingraham. Did you hear about that whole...
Yeah.
I didn't.
So, you know, he made a political comment, LeBron, and Laura Ingraham, Fox host, said, shut up and dribble. You know, and she lost a lot of, you know, a lot of sponsors as a result.
Oh, yeah.
And of course now LeBron just inked a new deal with Showtime to produce a series called Shut Up and Dribble. That will talk about basketball, race, sports, politics. So I thought that was pretty
epic.
She just
gave him the one up.
Beautiful idea. He was like, that's a great title for a show.
Yeah, people have been saying that with the NFL and all this other stuff. And it's just kind of one of those things, like, you can't have the best of both worlds. Yeah. Like, either there are some athletes who they just want to play the sport. They want to be left alone. They're fine with what they're getting. They're living where they're living. And there's some athletes who want more.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for people who usually say that, that's the people, they just don't want to hear their, you know, the opposite opinion.
And of course, I mean, my only issue is with kids, and that, for me, that's like, as a parent, you're the best, you know, person to say, hey, if you don't like LeBron's views, you got to say, well, look, when you watch him, this is what it's about, basketball, and I don't like the political views, and you impart that to your kid. And that's got to be you saying, here's how to discern the different messages you get from the world.
Right. Mm-hmm. But then also forces you, and again, you probably could speak more of it as being a parent, but if this person's political views are this, find out why their political views is this versus, no, they're just total opposite for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because then you as a parent are educating yourself to see both sides.
Yeah.
Because I've learned so much. I worked for a conservative radio station for a period of time, and I learned so much about, you know, the Republican view, which is like, okay, I can see parts of it. Some of it I just don't understand, but I can see why there's a fight for certain things.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not until you understand both sides that you can actually make, you know, a reasoning and kind of know why people are coming from these sides. But you're just going to say, you know, they can't kneel because it's against the flag. Like,
I agree with you.
Watch TV.
I think it's important to hear the other side.
Yeah.
Funny enough, when I was on The Voice, I had two teammates who were Trump supporters.
Yeah.
They also loved me, you know, and were big advocates and defenders and protectors of me while I was on that show.
Yeah.
And I think most of us have this idea that if you're for him, then you're against me and everything that I believe. We definitely don't see eye to eye on a lot. But I do, like, to your point, understand some of their views, how they came to that rationale to decide to vote for him or continue to support him, which, I mean.
Yeah, whenever, for me, I always have to, if I meet a Trump supporter, I have to breathe and go, let me give you a chance.
Yeah.
Like I just take a step, and then, you know, if it goes too far, then, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So. I had a guest come stay with me for a while from the Midwest. Older white guy. He was a Trump supporter. He actually had one of his books. I'll never forget this. One of his books, and he took the cover off the book just to preserve it. And I'm like, what the heck? Like, why are you for this man?
Yeah.
Like, why? You know, I don't understand it. And we were able to have conversations about, you know, what brought him to his reasoning and why he was for not so much Trump, but what he thought it would do for people where he was from.
Gotcha, yeah.
You know, and I think it's important. I tell my son to do that all the time. He went to a school all throughout his life where it was very diverse, you know, and we're from the hood. I call Dylan, that's his name, Dylan boy, a black white boy, because he's got, you know, he's got both. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important.
Yeah.
Yeah, so to your point, I agree with you. I think it's important to see both sides.
I think whenever I've had a friend who, and very few friends who are Trump supporters, it's always been sort of like we realize, and then it's sort of like, let's just focus on the things we do agree on.
Yes.
Like, and just like we talk about other stuff that we
It's like religion. Yeah. Like, stay away from politics.
Yeah,
religion.
You just got to realize, okay, respect you, and then move on. Yeah.
Just realize that, you know, the experiences that everybody faces is going to be different.
Yeah.
And realizing that, you know, just because you experience this and it's great doesn't mean that I'm going to experience this. Mm-hmm. Like, I literally was apartment shopping today. The guy came up and saw me and literally kept on driving.
Oh, wow.
And now you're like, so was that because I look like I'm from the hood, but you don't realize that I actually work for a major company? Yeah. Or is that just because, you know, I'm saying you're going through all this stuff and there's people that say racism doesn't exist.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
Oh, that's crazy.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, it is what it is. But you know.
Yeah, but it's like, still whack, though.
It is.
I did want to ask, do they do any social media training now in this age of like, oh, your tweet from 5 years ago might get you off the show? Was that an element on the floor?
Uh-huh.
Oh, really?
We'd have to go and clean sweep. Nice. Like, you know, there were certain things that not necessarily the show, but the network couldn't get behind.
Yeah.
So if you have anything on your social media that would trace back to the network, absolutely.
So tip number one, and before you hit fame.
Yeah.
But can you clean, like, can it officially be clean sweep? Like, meaning, like, if you
there's some programs out there where, or people you can hire to delete your entire Twitter, it might be cast. But if you're, like, if no one knows who you are.
Yeah, but I've deleted stuff off Twitter,
but
does it go somewhere else?
Basically, I could probably find it in the cast of Google, but like maybe I think it's just 30 days, or I forget the limit of time.
Okay.
And then go to the cast page, and I can like I maybe see what was saved before.
Wow,
but
interesting.
And then we do have an update for Demi Lovato. She was just released from Cedars Sinai, 25 years old. She's on to rehab, and she said she's, you know, she's got a battle. She's continuing, and she's, you know, she's realized it's a continuing battle. But 6 years sober, and on July 24th, she had the OD. Of course, in the entertainment industry, drugs, alcohol, as we talked about, is a lure, a temptation. You can fall into a hole. How do you navigate that when, you know, sometimes that big neck music exec might hand you the drink, and you want the drink, or you think you can handle it, but you find out later you can't?
Mm.
And we know there's a lot of alcohol and drugs in this industry.
Well, some of it is just social, right? You don't have to be in this business to drink and to kick it in that way. But I honestly think the answer to that is self-love and self-validation.
Self-awareness.
Yeah. And because a lot of artists, unfortunately, as brilliant as we can be, come here not really believing that.
Yeah.
And we come looking for someone to validate us. We come looking for someone to say, you're worthy.
Mm.
And in attempts to feel that sense of worthiness, we make decisions that are against our best interest.
Yeah.
Drinking may be one of them. Drugs could be another. Sleeping with someone, you know, is another. And I find that what has sustained me has been my ability, and first my network, my family, my friends, they've been great.
Yeah.
They are quick to check me if I'm wrong. I think that's important. You cannot have yes men around you. Mm-hmm. It will kill you.
Yeah.
Literally. But also my quest to understand myself and to make sure that I wasn't going into this business broken.
Mm-hmm.
And that I'm not spewing out brokenness and toxicity, which so many of us are, because we don't know mm-hmm. to take care of ourselves in that way. Mm-hmm. I'm a big advocate for that. And when I work with clients, whether it's on a television show or off camera, I make it a point that we're nourishing ourselves back to what Beyonce is choosing to do for herself. Right now, it's so important.
Yeah.
If I feel at peace with who I am, I can tell that executive, like, nah, I don't need to do that.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they're looking for someone
who's broken.
Who's broken.
Yeah.
And who's young and who's dumb.
Yeah. And that will sometimes translate into respect versus not respect.
Absolutely.
But I think it's so tough, especially if you're on a show like The Voice or The Four, where maybe you see some of the other people hanging out at the parties and like they're mm-hmm. inviting you and you're like, so like go to the after part, like, because you want to still remain competitive and feel, but at the same time it's like, if you know that's not an environment that's going to be conducive for your growth.
I don't think you can be a great artist without having your own personal constitution.
Did you have to like develop that? Did you have to say, like, this is who I am, and kind of say it out loud to yourself for you to kind of operate in the industry?
Absolutely. I had to develop that. And I'm still developing it, because as I get older, as I mature, my beliefs are changing. Yeah. You know, my needs are changing, both physically and mentally and emotionally. Certain things I just cannot have around me.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the case when I first started. And I encourage other artists to do that too. You're not an artist without a point of view.
Yeah.
Right? You can be an entertainer, you can be a musician, mm-hmm. great singer. An artist has a point of view. Sorry.
Now you can tell I'm passionate, I love the passion, right?
An artist has a point of view. If you do not have that, you're not an artist.
Yeah.
And you're not going to survive this.
You're lost.
I mean, even with that, you take, you know, someone like Michael Jackson, who's greater than he, who still had his own issues that he was working through. Very clear point of view, musically.
Yeah.
But to have that in your private life mm-hmm. is paramount. And I think Beyonce is an amazing example of that, because mm-hmm. we don't really know much about, except for what they are now revealing to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah.
And that's wise.
Yeah.
But we're now getting this clear picture of what she is passionate about, and her people are at the top of that.
Yeah. We're going to try to get a clear picture of what you're passionate about with our Fit Club 5.
Okay.
These are going to be five rapid fire questions. Okay. You just answer off the top. TK, you got it?
All right, here we go. So, last person you text?
My son.
Dream dinner guest?
Ooh.
Alive or dead?
Oh, Brittany Murphy. Oh,
last meal?
Last meal? Lasagna.
If you were a crayon, what color would you be?
Purple.
And if you were on death row, what would be your last meal?
Oh, actually, lasagna would be my last meal. Sorry.
So you just had your lasagna as your last meal?
No. It would be my last meal. I was thinking that question.
So what was your actual last
meal? My actual last meal? Sorry, guys. A handful of Honey Nut Cheerios.
Oh, that's not so bad. I thought you'd be like chitlins. Like,
I ain't messing with that. No, no shame to me when I get chitlins in LA.
The way she said it was like, oh, that's awful.
Because I'm like, come on, that's all you ate today? Really, Court?
Oh, that's all you ate today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, it's not good.
I mean, it's still semi better than chitlins.
But,
that's it.
We got to get to some self-care after this. What other projects do you have coming up?
Right now, I am coaching more, which I'm excited about. It's private coaching right now. Okay. I'm getting gearing up for season 3, which won't come up to. I would love that. I got you. I don't just work with artists. I work with execs and actors and whatever. So I'm also developing content for television, which I'm excited about. What else? So, you know, I have the Psych Ward. We had that event last year, so that's picking up again. And
how did you come to coach on the four?
I had a friend who is a songwriter. Actually, we're working tomorrow together. Sam Waters. He is a great friend of mine, and he is he's an exec on that show. And he hit me and was like, "Courtney, are you interested in doing this?" And I said, "Hell yeah!"
Nice.
So it's one of my bucket lists because I wanted to be able to go back to an environment that I had no one guiding me through.
And be able to be that voice.
And be able to help them.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, we're excited to see you for season three. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I had a great time
with you both.
So we're going to see you guys next week. I'm Shaka Smith. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at Shaka Strong.
And my name is TK Trinidad. You can find me on everything at TK Trinidad.
I'm Courtney Harrell. You can find me at I Am Courtney Harrell on Instagram, Courtney Harrell on Twitter and Facebook.
See you guys next week.
Ciao.
Thank you.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood Redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.